lunch or evening event, depending where you are, on Austrian politics in crisis, lessons for Austria and beyond. Why crisis? Because last month, after a corruption affair, the Austrian government, a coalition between the center-right People's Party and the Greens, was about to collapse. It didn't, but what happened was that a wonder kid, or perhaps a former wonder kid, the head of government, Sebastian Kurz, leader of the People's Party, still leader of the People's Party, resigned. And now, in the next hour or so, we want to discuss the situation in Austria as part of an event that's sponsored by the International Association of German Politics. I guess for the next hour, it's the International Association of Austrian Politics. And it's going to be Monika Mühlberg and Marcello Jeni who will be our experts for the next hour. Both of them will give a brief input at the beginning, but we plan to make this very interactive and then quickly move to the discussion. So please, if you have any questions already during the inputs by Monika and Marcello, just type it into the chat or ask it afterwards. Let me briefly introduce both of them. Monika Mühlberg is a senior researcher at the Institute for Advanced Studies in Vienna and an assistant professor at the University of Vienna. She holds a PhD in political science from the University of Vienna, and she has published widely on various issues such as political representation, European integration, and public policy. Hi, Monika. And Marcello is a professor at the University of Innsbruck. He holds a PhD in political science from the University of Mannheim, and he has published widely on electoral behavior, party competition, and parliaments. Hi again, Marcello. Let's start with Monika. The first question I have for you is a very general one. What has happened? Please give us a brief explainer on the current state of Austrian politics and its crisis. Thanks.
Yeah, probably I should say at the beginning, some note of caution. So as the things I'm going to speak about involve criminal investigations against some individuals, it's probably important to stress that the presumption of innocence applies. So a wording that has been used in Austria in the last weeks very often. But as a political scientist, the things I'm going to say apply only to political accountability and not to legal accountability. So it all started in June 2019 when the Ibiza video was published showing then party leader of the Austrian Freedom Party, Hatzi Strache, talking quite freely about his ideas of how one could take control over Austrian newspapers and how different investors, for example, the Austrian gambling company Novomatic, were making donations to parties. Typically, Strache claimed Novomatic pays everyone. So due to the revelations of the video, Strache stepped down from his position as vice chancellor. However, then Chancellor Sebastian Kurz from the Austrian People's Party decided that this was not enough, and therefore the government coalition between the People's Party and the Freedom Party broke down. Then we had elections, and the People's Party scored a huge victory and formed a new government together with the Green Party. But the Ibiza affair triggered the establishment of a parliamentary investigation committee and investigations by the public corruption prosecution. And due to Strache's allegations against the gambling company Novomatic, they started to look specifically into what's called the casinos affair. However, they did not only investigate potential wrongdoings of Strache and the Freedom Party, but also looked into potential wrongdoings of different individuals affiliated with the People's Party. And here, especially one guy became a prominent figure, and that's Thomas Schmidt, who was allegedly a close ally of Sebastian Kurz and had been general secretary in the Ministry of Finance, probably kind of the most powerful position in the ministry, after or even before the minister, and later became chief executive of the Austrian state holding, ÖBAG, which manages all the companies that are partially or fully owned by the Republic of Austria. So the public prosecution office confiscated Schmidt's mobile phone, and it turned out that Schmidt had very, let's call it, lively discussions with a lot of different people. And some of these chats have become public, and they do not paint a very nice picture of Kurz and his allies. So at this point, I need to stress that Kurz and the ÖVP deny all charges. They are running a campaign against the public corruption prosecution since the investigations have started, and they claim that the conclusions drawn from chat protocols are wrong and politically motivated, and that even if Schmidt should have been involved in wrongdoings, Kurz was not. So according to the allegations, in 2016 and 2017, Schmidt has used money from the Ministry of Finance to pay for surveys which harmed the then party leader of the People's Party, Reinhold Mitterlehner, while portraying Sebastian Kurz very favorably, in order to help Kurz first to take over the party and then win the elections in 2017. Furthermore, the chats found on Schmidt's mobile phone indicate that at least for one of the surveys, the results were actively manipulated afterwards in order to send the message that the People's Party had taken the lead in front of the socialists in public opinion. And finally, Schmidt also allegedly had an agreement with the tabloid newspaper called Österreich, Austria in English, to publish these survey results in exchange for the Ministry of Finance paying for placing ads in the newspaper. Schmidt also exchanged many messages with Kurz. For example, Kurz wrote to Schmidt, "Thanks for Österreich today," and Schmidt wrote back, "Always in your service." The performance of Kurz and the People's Party after this affair has become public has not been very professional, at least not as professional as we were used to the communication style of Sebastian Kurz. Because when it became clear that the corruption prosecution was planning further investigations, the People's Party called a press conference to publicly inform prosecutors that there was no need to raid the party headquarters because, and I quote, "there's nothing there anymore." So indicating that probably there used to be something there. After the chat protocols had become public, Kurz at first refused to step down. However, the Greens insisted, threatening to form a government without the People's Party. And critics within Kurz's own party became louder. In the end, Kurz took a step to the side. So he stepped down as chancellor and became chairman of his parliamentary group. So being a member of parliament would actually grant him immunity. But last week, the immunity was waived by parliament, and now investigations continue. Also, the People's Party has paid for an expert report by a law professor about the legal charges against Kurz. And one of the conclusions of this report is that legal charges are unfounded because paying for ads in a newspaper in order to receive favorable coverage was socially adequate behavior, according to the law professor. So far, that's the brief summary of events. But before I hand over to Marcelo, I would like to stress the following. So while I do, to at least to a small extent, understand that Kurz and the People's Party feel that they are treated unfairly because others before them have probably used similar strategies, and that Austrian President Alexander Van der Bellen was unfortunately not right when he claimed after the Ibiza scandal that we are not like that, because this type of behavior is unfortunately not only possible, but also fostered by the Austrian system of media funding. So although I kind of can somehow understand the feeling of Kurz, I very much feel that the behavior inferred from the chat protocols is not socially adequate. And I would actually be happy that the political misconducts have been made public, not that they have been made, but that they became public, in the hope that it will induce some profound system changes in Austria. However, the scandal really broke at the worst of possible times. So at the time when trust in the political system would be like totally essential for fighting the pandemic, and now this trust, which hasn't been too high in the first place, is further eroded by the revelations of the chat protocols. And probably to conclude, let me show some memes that have appeared on the internet following the scandal. So we have, on the one hand, kind of what portrays media coverage or coverage of surveys by the newspaper Österreich. And on the other hand, the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize for Thomas Schmidt's mobile phone for revealing the scandal. And this is kind of, the different views, how you could see the extent of the crisis and the revelations. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Monica, for this very concise and still very detailed overview of, perhaps not textbook example of good governance. And Marcelo, I hand over to you, asking how to interpret this. How do you interpret the current state of Austrian politics? What's your take on the situation that Monica introduced to us?
I think what you see is the risk that the party accepted when it put Sebastian Kurz in power, when it handed power to him in a degree that previous party leaders never had, even changing its party statutes, allowing him to choose ministers of his choice, allowing him to define the party's policy to an extent that previous party leaders never had. And it put him and his faction of loyal followers into powerful positions. And it continued with a very extremely leadership-oriented style of governing. And to an extent, concentrating on popularity as a measure of whether they are doing right or not, even though Sebastian Kurz for a very long time was the most popular politician on the national scene, and they concentrated on that measure, on being the most popular person for the sake of being the most popular person, rather than using that power to implement policy. And what you saw is, even when in this coalition government, in dealing with the pandemic, how the intra-coalition rivalries again and again dealt with the point, I want to propose the popular measures And if it's unpopular, somebody else has to do it. So from my point of view, what you saw and how he governs is, it's an extreme, usually responsiveness is seen as something positive. But in the Austrian governments led by him, you see extreme responsiveness to popularity that reminds me there is another term how you want governments to rule, and that is responsible government. You had popularity government, popularity-based government rather than responsible government. What you also saw is, for a long time, they were credited in being extremely professional, especially in their communication policy. But you also saw in selecting leadership personnel, they put loyalty trumped qualifications. And for example, these chat protocols, everybody wonders, it's such a detailed source of evidence of insight into how his most closely collaborators worked with him together, but everybody wonders how could they provide such nice evidence of the inner workings of the top ranks of this party. We are used to spoiled systems, to Austria being a patronage system, but they showed they did it to an extreme level, and unfortunately for them, they sometimes put the wrong people into these positions, and that was now a boomerang in hindsight. With regard to this extreme focus on popularity, it went just over the top when it was found out they even manipulated survey results just to being able to show that the party or the party leader is doing better than the competition. It revealed also a degree of cooperation with media. It didn't put, I think the media have it's a testing time for the Austrian media, for the Austrian news media, who have to reflect on their relationship with political power, on how the degree of being corrupted and how they report on political power, on the government, by depending on the money provided by ministries. It was already before, I think, Sebastian Kurz was at the height of his power when he attained office in 2007. And already in the last 1-2 years, you saw a little bit of power of other centers in the party slightly getting stronger, especially the land government, taking back a bit of the power they had lost before. But in the last few weeks, we saw it crumbling. And the last few days were impressive in showing now the land governors are running important decisions on how to deal with the pandemic rather than the federal government. And Sebastian Kurz moved from being head of government to being head of the parliamentary party, which makes the parliamentary party now an interesting, very important locus of power. He's working on his comeback, but you see that more and more, especially from the media side, and I think some of these media reports are rather indirect comments sponsored by people from within his party, that it's time to move on. That there is not a big chance of coming back to the top where he was, of being at the top of a government again. But I guess we will see another attempt to do it.
Thanks a lot, Marcelo, for your very interesting and precise comments. And they very much relate already to one question that's in the chat. Please, to all the others, if you have questions, type it into the chat or raise your hand. I start with a question asked by Mark Cassell. He asks, where were the Czechs within the People's Party? Surely many within the ÖVP knew what was going on. What happened to the responsible party model? And may I add, referring to Marcelo's last comments, will the responsible party model strike back now? Kurz is still party leader. He's not chancellor anymore, but he's party leader, leader of the parliamentary group. Will the others, especially the strong state governors inside the People's Party, slowly but steadily get rid of him? A question for both Monica and Marcelo.
Okay, probably Marcelo has already said a lot of things which could be our answer to this question. So let me just add, so Marcelo stressed that when Kurz took over the party, he redesigned the party constitution to make him kind of all-powerful. But that's not the only thing. I mean, Kurz, at least until the scandal, was just highly popular. Which is also interesting because there was actually not much need for his allies faking the survey results, because if you compare the survey results with other surveys done potentially without paying for them by the People's Party or by the Ministry for Finance, then you can see that he was still a very popular, probably not that highly, but still. And the People's Party has always kind of functioned in a way that they want to have the chancellor. That's kind of the most important goal, probably because they have been junior partner in so many governments with the socialists, that this was really the thing to strive for. And therefore, they choose a party leader, whoever they think will bring them the first position in the next election. And Kurz is basically the one and probably the only one in the party ranks who could do that. And that's even now, after the scandal, there's no one else kind of popping up in the party that who could come even somehow close to doing this and achieving such a victory for the party. So the feeling in the People's Party is that they are probably still doing as good with Kurz than when they get rid of him. But it very much depends on how the scandal will develop. So the public opinion is, of course, turning against Kurz now. And the People's Party is losing in opinion polls. Let's assume they are not fake. This will also make other party members try to ask for accountability, although they haven't asked that before.
I would agree strongly on that point, that apart from remodeling the party in his mold and putting people in all important positions, I think it was extremely important resource of having an appeal in the electorate that is much bigger than the traditional party base. That was the argument that beats any kind of intra-party crisis, which provides seats to to many people who are perhaps not that fond of his style of ruling and the policy contents of his government. But as long as he was the most popular politician, he could do almost anything. And that's the resource that's gone now. Perhaps he can reestablish it to a certain degree, that he reestablishes appeal, but getting back to the level where he was at, I think that's practically impossible. And that gives room to intra-party criticism. If they don't manage to get back to being in first place or being in a range that puts a distance between them and the Social Democratic Party, people now are talking again, well, he got his party statutes when he came into office, but it's easy to change the party statutes again and take away the powers that the party leader currently has.
Thank you, Marcelo. Now we have a question by one of the greatest experts on Sebastian Kurz's first coalition partner, the Freedom Party of Austria. Richard Luther, please.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say it's really good that we've got something in Austria for a change. So thank you for organising this. Can I just make a couple of points? First of all, about the ÖVP, I really agree very much with what Monika and Marcelo have said, but I'd just like to add a couple of things. Firstly, about the aspect of statutory change, which Marcelo addressed. I agree this is important, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact this was already done for Wolfgang Schüssel. So there were statutory changes for Schüssel at the time, and he was given rights to nominate candidates, etc., which was a novelty at the time. And the motivation, again, to agree with Marcelo behind this was for the party to finally get the councillor again. So, you know, the party had been pretty desperate. It's got a history of being incredibly divided, very vociferous. And so in the interest of success, they granted that to Schüssel. So there is a similarity there. I take the point that Schüssel kept the colour black, didn't make the party the Neue Volkspartei and so on. So he was still, relative to Kurz, Schüssel was still more traditional. But the second aspect, comparing Schüssel and Kurz, again, I agree with Marcelo on this, is one of the big differences is that Kurz was really, ideologically more interested in power than in policy. So it was primarily about obtaining office. And I think you can see that in a couple of ways. First of all, I think Schüssel was much more committed to neoliberalism, at least from an Austrian perspective. I mean, compared to Maggie Thatcher, it was still pretty statist. But from an Austrian perspective, that was quite neoliberal. And so at that time, the FPÖ moved towards the ÖVP in order to get into government, whereas the difference with Kurz, and again, that underscores Kurz's commitment, I think, to power rather than necessarily policy, is that the ÖVP and the Kurz moved to the to take over the agenda or many of the agenda aspects of the FPÖ. So I think that speaks again to the lack of commitment to policy as a priority as opposed to power. And I think the other point, so that was about the ÖVP. The other point I'd just like to address is, I think for me, whilst the alleged manipulation of surveys, you know, is something which political scientists find appalling and get very worked up about, for me, the bigger, more interesting aspect is the issue of patronage. And it's the use of power to place people acquire resources, which we've seen revealed through the Thomas Schmidt chats, which I think is interesting. And for me, looking at the broader context, for me, this is indicative of Austria's shift from a consociational democracy, where we had segmental encapsulation and elite accommodation, to a system where we no longer have segmental encapsulation, but we have a sense of entitlement on behalf of the political elite. So the political elite have this culture where they feel they're entitled to give jobs to the boys and girls And I think what you're seeing then is really a sort of cartel democracy, Leipart's old term. So Austria has moved from the 2x2 of the concertation democracy to a cartel democracy. Society is no longer segmented, but the elites, by and large, still see themselves as entitled through the whole system to exercise a sort of cronyist system. And you see that not just in quasi-state organizations and the UBAC and so on, but you see that also within the civil service. So one of the things I think has been really interesting is the revelations through the Ibiza Committee of malfeasance in public office. So people providing information for parties and also doing it for financial gain, if you look what's happening in the security service and so on. So those are just two aspects I wanted to add to the discussion, the one about the UVP on the one hand and the other about the broader systemic change. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Richard. Monica and Marcelo, do you want to respond to these comments or should we go with the next question?
Well, I just agree to what Richard said. I think that was also a very good analysis of the Austrian political system and probably also of its special features. And that's probably something, because there was also a question in the chat, how Austria differs from the UK. And I'm not an expert on the UK, but I would say that the system of political patronage is really something that's very special to Austria, and also due to the long-standing social partnership in Austria, kind of dividing kind of power between the two main parties, it has become much more obvious once the Freedom Party joined the government, because all of a sudden they had to redo the changes that were gradually done over the past decades to place their own people in powerful positions. But I fear the feeling of the Freedom Party was really something of entitlement. So far, parties in power have done this. Now we are in power. Now we are entitled to do this as well.
Yeah, I'd like to stress again, yes, to me it has become a new sort of spoil systems, which has gone beyond what we've seen before, and somehow perhaps it's because I'm getting old too, that these young boys took risks in what they did that probably older people wouldn't have done, doing things that were, to anybody looking at these things, borderline illegal decisions. And they took the risk of establishing people. And the same amount of risk-taking can be seen with some personal decisions, where I would stress none of the ministers that were selected by Kurz would ever be a danger to his position. So loyalty was the most important qualification rather than expertise. And it showed in some periods that even though the Greens were the inexperienced government party, Green government ministers had better ratings for competence than many of these People's Party's ministers, a party which has been in government for decades, so which should have accumulated expertise in how to rule, but it didn't show in the people actually chosen.
Thank you. The next question is by Chantal Sullivan-Thomsett. She asks, what is the impact of this scandal on other parties. I'm thinking of the present and former coalition partner, the Greens and the Freedom Party, or even the Social Democrats. Is this focused on the individual, or is this having greater repercussions? What's the impact on other parties? I think Chantal works on the Green Party herself, so she might be curious about that.
Well, I would say that kind of many parties in Austria have an interest to keep this on a personal level. So to blame Kurz personally and kind of not to talk too loudly about the systemic features that make this possible. Because we have seen kind of very close alliances between social democratic politicians and the media. We have like the City of Vienna funding newspaper ads at an amount that is kind of about half the amount the whole Austrian government pays for newspaper ads. So that's probably the reason why scandals like these haven't kind of appeared earlier, because no one really had an interest in these discussions to be raised. And now the interest with most parties is Kurz is blamed, and then no one else was responsible. Actually, for the Ibiza scandal, the FPÖ fared quite well with this personalization, because Hartzi Strache resigned, and now the Freedom Party is claiming they knew nothing about it. Can start from scratch, actually. I'm the only party probably that has not been in power, or the two parties that have not been in power for too long or not at all, are the Greens and the Liberal Party. So here we could see some push towards more transparency. But let's say I'm not overly optimistic that the Austrian solution will be very transparent.
Thanks for this sad and sober take. Marcelo, anything to add?
I think there is a lot of hopefully interesting stuff to come out of how this coalition rule. When this coalition of the Greens was formed, observers predicted that the Greens will go under given the predominance of the People's Party. I don't see that this happened. One reason is the pandemic happened, and the Minister of Health was and is a Green minister. So you had the most important ministry dealing with a huge crisis within the smaller coalition partner. And then all these judicial investigations, that's a topic for the Ministry of Justice, and that again is held by the Greens. So actually, we saw much more input from the Greens that all these negative predictions at the start of the coalition would have expected. That being said, I think we have at least two parties, and that includes a bit the Greens too, where we have somehow a latent leadership crisis. That's the Social Democratic Party, whose party leader, is limited in her popularity, in her voter appeal. They have now surpassed the People's Party, but it took very big scandals and big events to happen in order to establish the Social Democratic Party again as the strongest parties in surveys. And I think there is still a lot of intra-party criticism and intra-party deliberation whether she is the best candidate for a parliamentary election. To some extent, I would extend that criticism of party leadership to the Greens with Werner Kogler, who, relative to his ministers, somehow he is not very present and he's not exerted presenting himself as a strong leader from my point of view. The most present party leader, apart from Kurz, usually was the nearest party leader. So from the smallest party, she's rhetorically well-versed. But even in the pandemic, I think sometimes even NEOS took a course that, again, is not very popular among some parts of the electorate. And the NEOS strong issue always was education. And they're pushing, have always pushed during the pandemic for keeping the schools open. Currently, the schools are the epicenter where you have the highest infection rates. And even in this lockdown, we are keeping the schools open, which is the course that this party also favors, whereas the party is against the lockdown on other grounds. So what I see a little bit in the current Austrian political scene is some degree of disorientation in how to deal with this pandemic, which currently Austria is doing very badly. To some extent, it might have to do with the leadership crisis in the People's Party, which started at the beginning of October and for some weeks took away all the public's and media attention from the pandemic crisis brewing fast and strongly. But there are lots of really wrong decisions probably taken in hindsight by this government, and especially by the People's Party part of this government, just not recognizing the danger lurking during the summer with higher numbers compared to last year's summer, and when it took off in autumn, it we'll see whether we manage to stop crashing into the wall.
Thanks for the interesting discussion. Just from an organizational perspective, I suggest we continue for 15 more minutes. And may I add my own question here that very much relates to the effects of the affairs on other parties. Before Kurz resigned last month, all other parties, including the Freedom Party, considered cooperation in order to make Kurz resign, maybe even to form a coalition or a minority government supported by the Freedom Party, to have a government that excludes the People's Party. Of course, we don't know how advanced or concrete these plans were, but there was at least negotiations between even the Greens and the Social Democrats with the Freedom Party separately. So my question is, do you think one effect of the alleged corruption of the People's Party might be that the Freedom Party would become more acceptable to the People's Party's opponents on the left, in the middle, or long term? Or is this an unreasonable expectation?
It could have been a reasonable expectation if it weren't for the pandemic and if it weren't for the Freedom Party leaders' position towards the coronavirus. So he has started to be the Austrian Trump, making medical suggestions how to treat yourself with vitamin D against the coronavirus and other more, probably more dangerous stuff. And kind of spearheading the kind of corona skeptics in Austria, trying to gain voters, I guess. So probably he's also convinced himself of what he's saying. There's definitely a small but probably growing voter potential of corona skeptics. And the Freedom Party tries to speak to this voter potential of this group. And this makes it really, really hard for the other parties now to form a coalition with the Freedom Party.
Thank you. Marcelo, do you want to add?
I totally agree. On the one hand, it opened a step for the Social Democratic Party to think about future cooperation. But on the other hand, Kickl just moved his party into a corner again that makes cooperation extremely difficult with his extreme course on how to deal with the pandemic. It was a fascinating episode, these few days before the downfall of Sebastian Kurz as head of government. When the Greens held on to their position, he has to go. And Kurz mobilized all the groups in his party, the ministers, the intra-party groups, the land governors, the parliamentary party, and had them declare their loyalty towards him. So he raised the stakes to the absolute maximum. And the Greens still held out and said, no, you have to go. They knew they had, that's my take on why Kohler held firm. I think he held firm because he knew his own position is on the line too. If he wouldn't have done it, some MPs in his party would have broken away and would have voted against Sebastian Kurz anyway. So Kurz was a lost cause, however you dealt with it. So he took a course that was better for him personally too.
Thank you, Marcelo. Let's perhaps finish with a question that looks at the future by Ed Turner. He asks, how independent of Sebastian Kurz will his successor as Chancellor, Schallenberg, be? Do you expect major differences in substance as well as style? Substance-wise, one could even focus on the matter of migration, where Kurz was quite unique for a center-right leader in Western Europe in pushing for very restrictive stances towards immigration. What do you think about Ed's question, Monica, Marcelo?
I think that Schallenberg was chosen by Kurz as his successor because Kurz was convinced that Schallenberg wouldn't be independent, but loyal as kind of the rest of the personnel that Kurz selected. So the question is, if Kurz disappears from the political sphere, what can we then expect from Schallenberg? I don't know actually. So either Schallenberg will kind of develop an own personality politically, but we haven't seen it yet because he has had a diplomatic career. So there wasn't much chance on showing his independent stances, if he has them. Or the other thing could be that if Kurz disappears, the party will try to find someone else as a leader, and this will probably then not be Schallenberg. And yes, I would assume that the party will continue with this anti-immigrant stance, because it has been quite successful in terms of winning elections.
I think Schallenberg has an uphill battle because he's inexperienced in domestic politics, because he's seen as being still the pawn of Sebastian Kurz. So that allows other actors in the People's Party to exert their influence. Above all, I think the land governments. So we will see, my take again, a People's Party that is much less cohesive. And I agree with Monica. They will probably think about an alternative candidate if there are elections upcoming in the near future. Ahead, you see how fast careers can change. They thought they had a potential alternative candidate in a land governor, in the land governor of Salzburg, but the last few weeks totally destroyed that land governor's reputation because the way he dealt with the pandemic. So he's gone as an alternative party leader. So I think they will have to look quite a bit further to find anybody with a popularity appeal that goes beyond the party's core base.
Thank you. And is the implicit assumption in both of your statements that we won't see the return of the wonder kid Sebastian Kurz in Austrian politics?
Yeah, I would say no, but you should probably never say no in such a situation. So I think at the beginning of the crisis, Kurz was still hoping to be able to return. So hoping that kind of the criminal charges will be dropped. Then there is an election again, and he could come back as kind of being again supported by enough voters to claim that he's democratically legitimized by the voters. And in this case, I think he could return. On the other hand, now the recent developments are in fact that his party is kind of trying to look at alternative leaders beyond Kurz. And also his popularity is declining and the party's popularity is declining. So I think if this trend continues a bit further, it will be very difficult for Kurz to come back into politics anytime soon. So he'll probably choose an exit strategy, kind of finding a very nice post elsewhere. And the party will be on its own.
Well, he's still in politics. He's still official parliamentary party leader. And I think he's still got one important power base, and that is the parliamentary party. I think he has still a good grasp of that parliamentary party group. But when we are talking about whether will he return, where return to, I wouldn't rule out him leading the party into the next election, that he manages to be nominated as the top candidate of the party. But And he still has allies among some of the land governments. I don't think it's all of them by now. And I'm a bit skeptical whether the People's Party manages again to become the strongest party. And that's the thing where I see the biggest hindrance of him getting back into the job of government leader. That is, if there is an election before, we could speculate whether we have a new government composition without having an election. But that would also be very unusual in Austrian terms. So, however you think of it, I think it's an uphill battle for him to return into leading the government.
Thank you. Daniel Seidlet most forcefully made the point that political scientists should study center-right parties and should focus more on center-right parties. We hope that we convinced you that the Austrian case makes clear that this is actually the case. Thanks a lot, Monica and Marcello, for your great input. Thanks to all participants for your questions and engagement. I hope to see you around. And thanks again for the International Association for the Study of German Politics for hosting this event. And I wish you a great week. All the best to you.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the interest.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.